You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
All right, it looks like it's recording. I'm staring at the computer like I've never done this before. Welcome to the Beer Tour Guy Show, episode 25. I'm your host, Steve Johnson, owner-operator of Motor City Brew Tours, Detroit's original beer tour company. I'm kind of trying out a new tagline here. It sounds very dramatic, especially if you can hear the italics in original as I say that. It makes it sound more dramatic, I think. I know you can tell that through the radio. So again, welcome to episode 25. I'm excited to kick off this show. Instead of doing beer today, we're going to talk about hard cider. And I got Sean here, and he's going to introduce himself, and we're just going to jump right into it.
Hey, I'm Sean Nixon. I'm one of the owners of Fourth Coast Cider Works. We're just south of Lake Orion, north of basically where the palace is. And we're relatively new. We've been there for about a couple years. I have a background in cider making. I used to be a beer drinker.
You used to be a beer drinker. You say that like like you're in an AA meeting or something, and you're like, hi, my name's Sean. I used to drink beer.
Don't get me wrong. I love beer. I just can't drink beer anymore. I'm allergic to something in it, so I don't. So what I did was—
That's a bummer. Did you ever figure out kind of what that is? I come across folks who have hop allergies a lot, and that's become, I don't know, more common?
Well, you know, I thought it—
But you got a hop cider. You're totally showing me that right now.
Yep. We have a hop cider. It's our D-Hop, which is Detroit Hop on Public Transportation. It's our push for—
How clever.
It's our push for our— for public transportation in the city. So no, I don't think it's that. I've been to many doctors about it because trust me, I didn't want to give up beer. I was sick for like 3 years not wanting to give up beer. And at the time I was in the Army, I served in the Army for 15 years as an infantry officer.
Okay.
And they would send me out on missions, and you can't drink when you're out on missions, and obviously they frown on that. And when I was out, I would get better. I used to get a rash. And when I come back, all of a sudden it would come. And they said, well, maybe it's stress. I'm like, I really think home is less stressful than going out on these missions.
I'd say so.
It's probably not stress related. So eventually I gave up. But, you know, there's something about beer that's a social icon. People like to sit around, drink beer, have a beer, you know, just – talk and stuff. And so I went to cider, and I always liked the hard, dry ciders. I was living in Oregon at the time. I was working as a professor.
So Bend, Oregon?
Yep.
Working as a
Professor of military science at Oregon State University.
Wow. Professor of military science. I don't think I've ever met anyone who's done that before. How interesting.
It basically means we ran the ROTC program.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
That's what it was. And I was the head of the Cascades campus one. And
what a way to stay in shape.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, in a nice area too. Mountain bikes, you know, everywhere you possibly go.
And a beautiful market for beer, although cider is very prevalent there too.
Yep. And here's my plug for it. Cider is very prevalent. I know since I've been here, I've heard Grand Rapids is a beer capital, but I think Bend was more breweries per capita than anywhere in the country.
They always show up on the list that way.
Yeah.
Okay. I just think Grand Rapids has done a better job, definitely in Michigan and as opposed to other states, of marketing their city that way.
Right.
Right? No, I think Detroit's the best, right? I'm of course going to say that. Right. I run my business based on that. But they've done a good job of marketing it. Where Bend, really, they were ahead of the game, and really the craft beer movement started on the West Coast anyhow. So cities and states, you know, Oregon, Washington, California, Colorado, those states were always way ahead. Yeah. What a great state to live in. What a beautiful area.
I was lucky. I mean, it's on the east side of the mountain, so you get less rain and it's more high desert, but all woods. It's a beautiful place. If you ever get a chance.
It's on my list.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I had someone on a tour a couple of weeks ago that was from Oregon as well. Actually, they were from Bend, now that you say that. Okay. And they said all the same thing. So, like, you got to get out there, right?
Yeah, my wife is born and raised in Portland. And
okay.
I dragged her to Detroit, you know, because it's a way better city than Portland is.
You dragged her.
So she misses it. She wants to go back. But there's aspects of living in Michigan that are great too, that substitute some of the stuff that's in.
Well, we're a four-season state, and tourism is a big thing here, obviously. And there's just a lot of beautiful scenery as well in Michigan that she says, should get more credit for.
Yeah, she says she's traded mountains for lakes.
Right.
The lakes are beautiful. Yeah. So
That would be the big difference. Yeah. Yeah. Land of lakes versus land of mountains.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like mountain biking's a lot different here versus it would be on the West Coast in terms of we're not mountainous really. Even if you get into the UP where it's more mountains or more hills, it really isn't downstate though.
Right.
And how you ride is different here.
Right. There were rides that you can go downhill for 18 miles.
Amazing. I wouldn't know what to do with that.
You know,
so. I just have this crazy smile. My smile, I'd get tired of smiling so much if I was going downhill for 18 miles. That's amazing.
Yeah. Another one that we had in Bend, it had the biggest ski resort in the Northwest. And I did, for the military, I did biathlon for a while, which is cross-country skiing and shooting. But they had a ski race there that went down that same route, 18 miles downhill, just a nice gradual downhill the whole way. And it's like probably better than you can get on a run here, on a downhill run.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it was great.
How cool. Mm-hmm. So you did 15 years in the military. Then is that typical to go in for 15 and then come out? Educate me a little with that.
No, actually 20 is retirement.
Oh, 20 is. Okay, yeah. Sorry.
Okay. So the reason I did was my wife's in the Army Reserves and she mobilized. And so the first time after all these times of doing missions and running, you know, being overseas away from my family, it was the first time that I got to be the one staying home and realizing how much it affects. We have two daughters. They were younger, obviously younger at the time, and how much it affects them, how upset they get and everything like that. And it was, I think, time for me to get out and just, you know, spend some time with the family. One thing one of my daughters asked me to do before I left it, or when I left, is like, are you going to be able to come to my games? Because I miss all her games and stuff. And I said, I'll make all of them. Man, that's been a tough promise to
me. I would think it would be.
It's a lot. I try to make every single one except if they have conflicting ones. And yeah, that's.
You know, my sister and I both played soccer. And you know, my dad was an executive for Chrysler. And I was always amazed. At the time, I don't think you fully appreciate how hard it is for working parents to like make all those types of things. And my dad did 90% plus, right? He was real good about getting there. And I loved having him there, and so did my sister. But I look at it now and think, how did he do that?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's so difficult.
I mean, there's weekends that we're running all around and then going back to open the cidery, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So right now, Fourth Coast Cider Works, which you essentially started in 2016.
Yes.
And then when did you open the tasting room? Was that 2017?
It was. It was last spring. So it was
last spring.
Not this spring, the spring before. Yeah.
I couldn't remember. I just know that I'd been there. Yeah. Okay. So you open up the tasting room and basically you're open Friday, Saturday for 6 to 9 p.m. So kind of limited hours, but you open it up.
Yeah. So the reason we do that, so when I was leaving the military, Oregon State offered a course of study in cider production. I always made dry ciders because that's what, and you know, they sell some, but they don't sell a lot of dry ciders. So I thought I'd make my own. I made a batch and it was awful. It was like the worst thing I've ever drank. So I decided to study up a little more. And then my wife pushed me into going and studying hard cider at Oregon State. And, when I was there, the model that they brought in the guest speakers, they had people that help with breweries opening and stuff. And the dry ciders, like, for example, one of the things they said, or the example that they used for almost every cider was no tasting room, just a cidery, ship out to the wholesalers.
Interesting. Okay.
And so I never even planned on having a tasting room. So we went out and tried to, you know, market our stuff, go to stores, give out sampling, everything like that we possibly could. And everywhere we went, they're like, is there a place we could come try it? Is there a place we could come try it? I'm like, all right. Finally, I broke down and we took part of the cidery and kind of renovated a little bit for a little tasting room there. And so now people can come, you know, 6 to 9 limited hours because the rest of the time I'm working, making the cider. So
yeah, you're making it happen. You're hustling.
Yeah.
Right. So is it all based out of, were you a fan of cider before you gave up beer, or was it, okay, I can't do beer. Now I'm going to try cider. And now that I tried cider, I've kind of fallen in love with it. I kind of take me through that.
I think the issue that I had was I'm not a sweet guy.
Okay.
I don't mean my personality is not sweet. I mean, I'm not sweet.
You seem pretty friendly.
So I don't like, you know, I don't like sweets. And it seemed like everywhere I went before I had started giving up beer, everything was a sweet cider and sickly sweet, you know?
Okay.
So I kind of steered away from them. When I started getting into the dry ciders afterward, as a substitute, I'm like, I realized, wow, these dry ciders can be really exciting, you know?
And were you finding a lot of dry ciders because you were in Oregon?
Yes.
And there's a lot of cider makers there?
Yeah.
Do you have a dry cider with you?
I do. I actually
– Was that a leading question? I think it was because I'm like staring at these cans. Yeah. And like, man, I'm starting to get thirsty.
I actually have a few. So when I started, I made two ciders, a semi-sweet and a dry. The dries are rooted in sanity. So I just made a nice clear apple cider that's dry.
Okay.
And if you can see, it's a nice clean.
It sure is. I could tell that through the blue Solo cup. That is clean. Okay.
This is just a casual drinking that you can sit around and drink just like a beer. Not too sweet. It doesn't overpower you. It's not like you're eating a dessert all day. So I just try to do a nice, dry, smooth, casual cider. And that's my rooted in sanity.
Has this been considered kind of your best seller?
So that's funny. We have two distributors. And probably over here in Southeast Michigan, our Rooted Insanity is our bestseller. In West Michigan, our semi-sweet wildflowers are bestseller. So I don't know if there's taste difference or if it's the approach to people's approach to it or what is available on either side of the state.
Wow. I guess if I knew the sales data on both sides, I could just make guesses and say that probably most of the West Side cider makers are making sweeter stuff, but I don't know.
I'm not sure. And I've went to one of our competitors and I went to the tasting room. They sell a little bit sweeter stuff in the stores and everything they sell out of their tasting rooms was all dry. They said, that's what sells.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
So,
I mean, I'm pretty familiar with the majority of cider makers and I guess today there's just a wider range of options than we had where – I think it's one of those challenges you have to constantly overcome is that people who did try ciders, say, 5-10 years ago, it pretty much was always woodchuck or it was like an English cider or Irish cider, right? Like a Strongbow or something like that. It was one or the other, right, with kind of nothing in between. And now as people's palates have gotten so much – I don't want to say advanced, more matured – with all these craft beer styles, all these craft beer varieties out there, as they venture back into cider, they're like, oh, I thought all cider was just sweet. And
little by little,
takes cider makers like yourself to experiment with new things, kind of open people's minds up. But it must be a constant education for you, educating the consumer, that is, that they can have these options.
It is. You're absolutely right. When we started, I think even when we started, the sweeter was selling more. And now all of a sudden, the drier starts selling more. It was funny because we had guest cider makers come in to our lectures a few years back in Oregon. And they're like, you can't make dry ciders. They don't sell. And the selling point for us, we're like, well, we like dry ciders. That's why we make it. It's like, well, what do you want to do? Do you want to make ciders or do you want to make money?
Yep. Right. Isn't that always the challenge? Yeah. As a business owner, that's a challenge.
Yeah. And so I kind of bucked that a little bit and made one of my first ones dry, but I try to make it smooth dry.
This is very smooth.
So we use, again, going back to the beer, we use an ale yeast in it instead of a cider champagne yeast. It doesn't dry as much. It can't live in that high alcohol content. So if it doesn't dry, it make it bitter. It makes it.
What's the alcohol content on this?
6.9.
Okay. ABV, yeah. What a great way to start the show off, isn't it?
Yeah.
A nice 6.9. It doesn't taste like a 6.9 to me though.
I don't think I don't go much lighter than that though, ABV wise.
You know, I guess I haven't thought about it when I've been out to your tasting room. I just sample. But, I don't see a lot of lower alcohol ciders out on the market. I know Vandermill makes that Vandy. That's a lower ABV, but I don't see it in a lot of places. And I guess I question, like in the beer world, how the trend right now is more session. A certain amount of the market is sessionable, like the all-day IPAs of the world and other sessionable, maybe lighter beers that are still craft. Now, do you see that happening at all with cider?
I've seen a couple, and I'll tell you one of the two that's going to be out there because we're waiting on our labels for one is our Citrus Session. We actually make Citrus Session that's a 3.65 ABV, and it's under 100 calories.
Interesting.
It's a grapefruit. And our idea,
so going after that healthy customer.
Yeah. Which is
definitely on trend right now.
Well, and also it's just something like we want it out for the summer, so Summer Citrus Session.
Sure.
So you can drink it all day in the sun and not be full, not, you know, like I said, not like you ate dessert all day, like you had something refreshing all day. So we went with the citrus on that. Yeah, that'll be out in cans real soon. So.
Oh, how cool. Mm-hmm. I'd love to have that on one of my upcoming beer tasting boat cruises. I'm offering one in mid-August. I got one in mid-September and one in October. Boy, we'll be talking off air about that for sure. Right. So check out my website, folks, for my beer tasting boat cruise I'm doing in mid-August, and hopefully I'll have some Fourth Coast Cider Works that I'll be offering on the boat. So that's another reason to come on that boat with myself and, you know, 200 of my friends sampling beer and a great cider. So this is a little self-serving having Sean on today because I already knew I wanted to do that after we talked maybe 2 months ago when I was out at your tasting room. So, yeah, this is a great cider, though.
Yeah, like I said, this is my favorite, the Rugen Sandy. And I've experimented with others. And I'm going to go to – can I show you another one real quick?
You can show me whatever you want to show me here.
I can't show everyone this.
So this we're on the radio, so no one's really going to see that.
Right.
They're just going to hear what you're doing.
So this is my next one, again, going back to the beer drinking. This is called a Smokin' Stout. And this is my stout version of a cider, kind of like we did a Sessions version.
Interesting.
Now we're doing a stout version. Now, the sugars that we use are not obviously the same as in a beer. But what I used to darken this, make it more of a smoky taste, was dark Belgian candy.
Oh, wow. Well, I know I like that. Mm-hmm. Cool.
So,
you got one of those cool recyclable keychains there with the bike chain on it.
Yeah, and this one says, keep Oregon beard.
Oh, it does. Okay. I work with that company, Resource Revival, and here, you could just put it down. I have those same ones that say Motor City Brew Tours on them that I did for my charity bike ride. Shoot, I should have brought one for you. Next time I see you, I will hook you up with one of those. And then I used them last year for these you ever seen the coasters that they offer, this company? It's that bike chain around the side, and it's a bamboo wood coaster with kind of cork backing, and they burn your logo into the middle of it. Oh. And last year when I was doing my charity bike ride out of Clubhouse BFD, we gave away 500 of those. It was like the swag that every person got. And our challenge was people liked it so much they wanted to buy them, even though like you got one free one when you registered. But I only really made so many, you know, to give away. I got to the end, I'm like, crap, I didn't really think that through, right? And the provider, like I'm sure that was a huge order for them. I'm sure usually they get an order like for 25 or 50 of those, right? And here I am ordering, I think I ordered 550 for the event. But cool company, you know. And they've had the keychain you have there. That's kind of their original product that they've had out for a while.
And unfortunately, I've been using mine for so long since I left Oregon that it's kind of worn out a little bit. It's struggling a little bit.
But the chain hasn't broke down.
No.
So that's the best part, right?
Yeah, actually, I usually take this with me when I go out run or something outside, and it's frozen. It's rusted.
That definitely says you've been using it. So this is a real unique taste.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, it's dark. It looks just like a stout. It's got an interesting kind of sweetness to it. But I could taste the apples.
Right. So the it gives it kind of that we actually oaked aged this, so it's not just
Belgian candy.
And we gave it kind of that darker taste through. We fermented some, so we gave it through the Belgian candy, really dark Belgian candy. I actually would have preferred to be a little bit darker in color, but this is where the taste is at. If we went any darker when we're experimenting, it got a little too bitter. So this is a nice – we try to keep it, again, smooth.
Very interesting. Wow. I can't say I've ever had a cider this way.
So the next one that I didn't bring with us, but that we're going to see, people have to come out and try it.
Of course they do.
Between
6 and 9, Friday and Saturday. Yep. Check their Facebook page, Fourth Coast Cider Works on Facebook, or their website, fourthcoastciderworks.com, to make sure they're open.
Yep. So the next one that's getting ready to brew is, and we've done in small batch experimental, is with Hefeweizen yeast to kind of give it German Hefeweizen. So yeah, I haven't really
shout out to the Germans.
That's right. So I haven't really moved too far away from beer, but I do have some that are strictly cider. I have my lines right now. I'm pulling off a blackberry basil. Light basil with just a touch of it. But
what does the basil do to it then?
It gives it a little bit more of a complex taste. Instead of just be two sweet things, it kind of offsets it. And I'll tell you where we got that again. Going back to Oregon, I had I was reading an article about the most searched recipes for each state, and Oregon was blackberry basil jam. I'm like, okay.
Weird. Okay. I shouldn't assume that things won't work, right? Like I'm always amazed at these combinations.
Yeah. Well, I have to put my faith in it. I have three great things in my life that came out of Oregon: two daughters and a wife. So
those are pretty good things to come out of Oregon, I'd say.
So
right?
So hopefully this recipe will be enough.
Shout out to the family, right? Yeah, no doubt. You got to say that, or she'll never listen to this episode, right? She'll delete this off the website.
That's right.
That's not going to do you any good. We don't want that. So tell me about running a business where the wife and really the kids probably to a certain degree are all involved.
They are. My kids begrudgingly help me every once in a while.
I'm sure, right? It's like, you guys need to hang out here, and while you're here, blank, 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 yeah. Right?
Yeah. So they have to help me clean and stuff, and they're always head down. And, you know, it's summer break. We don't want to come help. But, you know, hey, it's like we tell them it could be yours someday. So we're not doing it.
It's all for the greater good.
Right.
My whole family helps with my tour business. It's always been that way. I have friends that help. And that's just the nature of being a small business owner. I think the longer you do it, the more you appreciate the fact that your friends are there to support you and have kind of bought into it, right? I think last time I was in, you had some friends that's kind of come out. Yeah. And that's neat. Like, I love to see that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. We have regular – and we have our regulars that come out too. They're always fun that help support us and stuff. Yeah. My wife, she works still, but she still helps me. She's there whenever she can on Friday and Saturdays with me. Yeah, she's still an optometrist. She's actually the majority owner of our business. I gave her majority ownership, and there's a story behind that. When we started, I could afford one bright tank. So I searched everywhere for our big, huge glycol chilled bright tank. It was the most expensive thing that we have. And, I bought it off of, believe it or not, eBay, but I searched the company. I called the shipper and everything like that. And I waited a couple of days, never came. And I call him back, and he goes, "Oh, I have a 6-month lead period on this, so you got to wait."
Oh.
I'm like, "Ooh, that hurts." So, we didn't have our place yet. I was collecting all our equipment before we moved into a place where we weren't paying rent while waiting for licensing and everything. So 6 months comes around, and she's like, "Are you sure about this guy?" Well, I checked all the resources for him and stuff, all his, and nothing comes. I try to get all of them, nothing comes. So I finally got hold of one of his shipper, and they're like, "Oh yeah. Someone burned down his house. It's probably one of his clients because he wasn't delivering."
Oh my God.
So I lost basically everything and we were done. And, you know, Lori, my wife, she's the one that said, "Be careful what you're doing here." And sure enough, so I called eBay and they're like, "Nope, 30 day, that's it." And it's been 6 months. I go, "It says 6 months on your website that it's a lead period." And I go, "I need to talk to someone." And they said, "Okay, we'll give you your money back." And we were back in business.
But wow.
After that, I kind of run all those big things by her. So she's a 51%.
that seems like great advice, right? Yeah. That's probably advice for all husband wife teams. I have to say, I deal with tons of breweries that are husband wife teams. And it's almost always like the wife is like the business brain behind it. Or at least the person that is like the gut check for everything. I need that. If I didn't, my wife has a regular job and health insurance and pays the mortgage for us, and then I run a tour business. But like even today before I came over here, I was working on an adjustment for my logo for a new hat design I'm going to do, some embroidery. And I was just going to take it to the printer, right? But I just couldn't. Like I had to show it to her to make sure I wasn't like off.
Absolutely.
Do you do that a lot?
I do that all the time.
Yeah. Boy, is that helpful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's better to bounce it off one other person instead of think it's myself. You know, that was another thing. in the Army, so my wife's is even better than the Army. They always – every officer has a non-commissioned officer, a sergeant, that they basically get assigned to work with. And the sergeant always has way more experience than the officer does because they've been in for way longer. And it just works that way. And whenever you do anything, you always bounce information off that other person just to make sure, because, you know, you kind of think in a vacuum and you're already too close to the decision.
So true.
So by me, even though she's close to the decision too, she can always step back and give me a different perspective on things. So yeah. Yeah, that's it kind of comes back to that too, that always bounce something off someone else before.
She's going to give you the real answer.
Yeah.
Because she cares. Plus, she's obviously the majority too. But besides that, you know, you need that in your life, yeah. Right? It's almost like we're doing marriage counseling now as we're talking about this.
Yeah. But get away from the cider.
Yeah. How long have you guys been married?
Oh my gosh. Now you see, you're just supposed to ask me that. Cause
I know I shouldn't ask questions like that. I'm coming up on 17 years.
I think I'm coming up on 16.
Oh, wow. How funny. Yeah. Cause we're about the same age. I swear we had this conversation before, at the tasting room, I think.
Now all that stuff I said good, now it's going to all come back and bite me.
Right.
I don't know how long.
It's funny because, like, if you're ever together and then that question comes up or someone else asks you that and your wife's next to you, it's like they look at you like you should just rattle that off like the second it gets asked. But, you know, you need a little pause on your brain to think about, okay, what was that date? What's the year today? Okay, I got to subtract blank from blank.
Yeah, years tick away. And
it does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I was just thinking the other day, I'm like, oh my gosh. Like my wife was talking about this is what we're going to do on our 25th wedding anniversary. I thought, 25? Oh my God, that's like forever from now. But I guess it's really not, right. You know? And like that'll come up before you know it. And then it's going to be like, whoa, we should have been saving sooner if we wanted to do that kind of thing, you know? And I think the life of a small business could be like that too. I mean, here you are, you're a few years in. And, you know, some days you feel like you probably never learned anything. And other days you're like, wow, look how far I've come.
You know, the one thing that I find kind of interesting about it is that I live by the life of the cider. And I know that sounds odd, but because I'm doing the cider, I'm developing it when it's dried. And I have the next cycle coming through when I can put it in the bright tanks, when I can, you know, whatever. I have to live by that cycle. When I used to do work and, you know, teach at the school. You live by Monday through Friday. So
sure.
You know what happens every day. And it's
and probably by the semester, were you semesters?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're thinking in terms of semesters.
Yeah.
So by the week, by the class, and by the semester.
Yeah. And now it's not like that. Also, it's like, oh, it's weekend. The two stabilizing is open in the tasting room. So that's probably a good thing because now I know it's Friday, Saturday again, and it's starting up again. So.
Yeah. For me, I run events like pretty much every Saturday. So I'm always focused on the next Saturday, right? And every once in a while, it's like you need to unplug from that and think longer term and or just relax and not think about any of it.
Right.
Kinda, you kind of need both.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Like right now, I'm dealing with the fact that I have like three competitors, two that have started in the last 2 months that are doing things similar to what I do as a tour operator. And this is my 10th year of business. So I started in June of 2009. And it's funny, like I've had friends be like, hey, man, like you should, you know, because I'm like frustrated about that. Oh, my gosh, I've had these people just pop up and they're like copying aspects of what I do and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And you want to be mad. But on the other side, you're also like, boy, I need to batten down the hatches and tighten up. And like, what haven't I been thinking about? Because you could get so lazy in what you're doing and or you just get caught on the next event and not take the bigger picture look at things. And that's hard.
You know, one of the things that helped me a lot, and I say this now and I haven't done it yet for this year, and I have my boss tell me we had to do it for this year, is I actually got a mentor from SCORE, Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he actually had me sit down since we started with planning before we even did our business plan and make plans for each year on what we're doing. Because like you said, you get kind of caught up in what you're doing.
You do.
And you forget to think ahead on what you want to do. I mean, last time we did it, we had these goals to open the tasting room. You know what I mean?
Right.
Kind of thing. And we hit those goals and that helped us move forward. And I think I know we have to sit down and discuss what we're going to do again, but
yeah. It's something it's like you got to set aside time for it. Me, I set aside time. I'm almost always doing that now to a certain degree, but I definitely set aside time like in the fall. So like I'll have a little, I don't know, quieter period at times and then I could start like a new planning cycle. And that's so important. Yeah. It's like you need to ask people what they think, right? Like, yes, you have customers. Customers are probably always giving you opinions about what they think of different ciders they're tasting when they're in the tasting room, and or if you're in the market or you meet someone at a festival or something. And it's like, now you could take all that information and get beyond just the next batch you're making and think long term. Okay, how do I want to be in 5 years?
Right, right. And we've refined things. You can refine things so much by asking those customers. And now we want to look. We have to sit down and say, okay, we've made 20 different ciders. Which ones do we want to keep? Which ones don't we want? One of them that we're probably not going to keep that I love is our Dragon's Breath, which was a spicy maple. We only have a little bit left at the cidery, but I love spicy. But I love hotter than restaurant spicy. It was hotter than restaurant spicy.
Yeah, some of my friends came in one of the last times that I came out to your tasting room. They had it and they liked more spicy. Me, I don't. So for me, it's like kind of lost on me. So then it's, okay, I like this. Can I sell it though?
Right.
Or can I sell it fast enough for what I need to sell it?
Right.
Right. I think that's always tricky.
Yeah.
Like, I've created tours where I thought, oh, I just love this tour. But no one bought tickets, you know?
Yeah.
And then you give them, like, okay, why didn't people buy tickets, right? What was not appealing in that? You think that through, right?
You know, one of them I'm going to come back to is this one, our de-hopped one.
Ooh, let's jump right into that bad boy.
Yeah, this is not my favorite. I'm not the hop guy. So I got to tell you another story about hop. There was a place in Bend that opened up. It was I'm sure you guys seen the trucks. Deschutes Brewery's brewer broke off and opened his own place. He's like, we're not going to have any hop stuff. We're not going to do any IPAs. I'm sick of doing IPAs. 2 months later, he had a triple IPA, a double IPA.
he changed that tune real quick.
Exactly. And, so I haven't been a real big hops guy. My wife loves this one, and so I stopped making it, and she did not like it. And I bought one keg back from our distributor, and it went out in hours. Literally.
Oh, wow.
The people who come in wanted the D-hop. People love the D-hop. So guess what? I started making the D-hopped again.
You know, so what types of hops are you using?
We only use Willamette hops. It's a mix between Fourth Coast, Michigan apples, and Willamette hops.
So okay.
Kind of like our family.
Interesting. I just did, I don't remember if I was explaining this to you. I just did it a few weeks back. It's called Tour to Hops, and it's a bike ride I do from Fenton Winery and Brewery to Top Hops Hop Farm. You familiar with Top Hops in Goodridge? And we tour the hop farm once we bike out there. And wow, what a cool facility. And it was fun because I definitely had a group of people that were bikers and beer drinkers, but they didn't know much about what a hop farm, like they get the idea that you grow hops, but that's probably it. And the owner and his wife, so Mark and his wife, they were there, and he gave such a great explanation of the process and the types of hops that they're growing and kind of what's more prevalent in Michigan, and really educated the group. He probably spent an hour and a half with our group on that, and I learned stuff out of it. Boy, there's a lot to learn when it comes to hops.
I should probably go out there and learn some things, because I've been trying to grow hops for 3 years now, and I get like it gets about as tall as I am.
Ooh, I really like this. This doesn't taste overly hop to me, though.
It's dry. It's a very dry hop.
So maybe cider. I've just never had a dry. Maybe I've never had a dry cider with hops in it. Maybe I've always had it as sweet. I don't know. I haven't had a whole bunch of hop cider, so I'm probably not as educated on that part of it.
The one thing I like about the dry with the hops is that it's not a competing taste like sweet and hop.
Yep.
So it kind of really brings out the hop taste in it. Yeah.
It does, but it works well as dry. Ooh, wow. That might change my opinion a bit about those. And I don't consider myself a hop head. I mean, I can dabble in it, but I don't go out of my way to get IPAs all the time like some folks do. I'm more jump around a lot with how I drink beer and cider for that matters. I'm probably the same way with cider, although I'm starting to appreciate dry ciders more the more I have them. Just like I'd like to appreciate dry wine a little more. I think with wine, I started all sweet just like I did with cider. And as I've tried more wines and as I've tried more dry ciders, I'm starting to appreciate the taste a little better.
Right. And you know, I also know we do a lot of dry stuff, but I also know that there is that market out there where people want something sweet or fruity or something like that. I do know that. I mean, that's why we do our blackberry or our sweet peach. And the sweet peach is only semi-sweet. We do a series, our address is 140 Inglewood, and it's Suite D, S-U-I-T-E, D. So we do a Suite D series. It's a playoff of the Suite D from It's Always Funny
clever.
In Philadelphia. So our Sweet Peach is spelled like the Sweet, S-U-I-T-E, instead of Sweet. I keep on having to – I know how to spell Sweet.
Right? Yeah, people are like, you know, that's funny.
Yeah, so.
I love your space, though. And for folks who – let me describe the space to you out there. It's basically – it's right off of Lapeer Road in this industrial plaza where essentially you're – it's like renting out glorified garages to a degree with a little space to sit down next to it. And that's what it is. And I'm not trying to belittle it by saying it that way. That's just the space. And I've been to other breweries that have done stuff like that. It's a real efficient way to have a production space, but also add in some tasting room. Were there special permits that you had to get to offer the tasting room open to the public in a space that you were doing production out of?
We're on a wine license, small maker, so we could do the tasting room as well to have that. When we first opened, like everyone that goes through the MLCC process, we had to go. This is actually kind of a neat thing that I give a very big thank you to the Orient Township that we're at. I emailed them, told them our situation. This cidery was my reintegration into society from the army. So I used my
that's a big word, reintegration into society, huh? Yeah. Okay, continue.
We have always have these reintegration programs. So I used my savings from the army and I sunk it into this. And I wrote them to tell them my story because I had to get approval from them. And I didn't hear back from them for 2 days, which isn't that big of a deal, but I want to make sure they got the email. All of a sudden, like, I'm ready to email them. I got an email back. It went through everything in their thing. They were so supportive of us. And
oh, that's
business,
great.
You know, the business out there, they're so supportive. They want the business to come out there and stuff. And we got it was longer than 2 weeks, but it was like a week and a half, and they came back and voted for our for us to.
That doesn't seem – that seems pretty quick to me.
Right, right. We don't have outdoor seating. We don't have anything like that because that's, again, obviously there's not a place to even put the outdoor
seating. There be restrictions like for you to have a food truck ever show up there? Are there rules about that in Orion Township or Lake Orion?
I don't know.
Okay.
Not something that I haven't looked into, but something that I don't have the answers to yet.
I know the pizza guy can get there because I had pizza delivered in there. What was that last December when I brought that bus group out? That was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
And what did we learn from that? We would learn to have maybe a smaller group next time because I had a few too many people I brought in. But people were interested. So it was one of those good days for sure. I feel like you guys sold a lot of to-go, which is what I was hoping for. Yeah. And people didn't care that it was tight. Like we worked the space the way you had it, and I thought that was fine.
Yeah, that Christmas tree, another one of the family things, that Christmas tree my youngest daughter set up for that group to
– You know, I didn't know that. Oh, wow, cool. Damn, I would have taken a picture of that then. Sorry. I apologize on my behalf.
So, that was one of their jobs that they had to do, decorate the Christmas tree.
Okay. Well, it looked cool and people had – it was one of those good days. Like I said, I've been running a tour business for 10 years. And, you know, there's some routes we do a little more often, stuff in the city we're doing more often, and there's more private tours that come out of that, or our walking tours are obviously more prevalent. But we'll rotate in these different bus tour routes occasionally. And the second you guys opened, I was already thinking about it, right? Like, it was my friend Jason, who lives in Lake Orion, who's going to soon open Oat Soda, and said that there's this great coffee maker, and right next to them, or right by them in the same area, is this guy making cider? And I'm like, what? I haven't seen that. And then I went and found your Facebook page. And then I was like, oh, how am I going to figure this out, right? I gotta come up with a route that makes that work. And having a couple breweries in Oxford, or well, soon to be two breweries in Oxford, and you guys, and then the Rochester Mills Production Brewery, kind of all fell together.
So on that, I wanted to talk about one more of our ciders. This is our La Cascara. And we use
– this might be my favorite.
Is it this one?
I think so.
This one we actually just won a silver medal at Glen Cap for. So
okay. Tell people what that stands for.
Great Lakes International Cider and Perry Competition.
I had to think about it for a second as you said it. Okay.
I think that's correct.
Yeah. That sounds correct to me.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's exciting. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thanks. So Cascara is actually the cherry to the outside of the coffee bean. Everyone goes, coffee is in it. I go, no, no. It's the fruit. The coffee bean is actually the seed inside of it. So we infuse the Cascara into it, and it gives a kind of a cherry vanilla with a little bit of tobacco hints at the end. This we get from the people who are two doors down from us, that Jason, who's opening Oat Soda, goes to White Pines.
And it's kind of partnering with, I believe, because they're going to be their coffee provider or something. And then those guys have some cold brew product, I believe, right, that they recently released or they're going to put in the market or something.
They do. They have – they're canning a cold brew right now. They've actually been using our cans to experiment.
Oh, they are. Yeah. Oh, okay.
And then we've been – in exchange, we've been getting Cascara from them.
Oh, that's a good deal. Yeah. How nice to be able to collaborate with someone when you're in something so industrial. I mean, who knows – if you'd ever meet anyone.
Right. So the last Saturday of every month during the day, they asked me to open earlier, but I open about 12. I don't know about serving cider in the morning. It's just, you know, people drink their coffee and come over. We both open up. So I usually open from 12 to 3 so that people can come by and they're open at the same time and people can get their coffee and people can come get their cider. So we kind of do that because we're right next to each other.
Oh, that's fun. How cool. Yeah, wow, this is so unique. This is definitely the first time I've had a couple coffee ciders, but not in how you just described this. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, so it comes in, the cherry itself comes in. Basically, we can make a boil down. It has a brix to it, and we can boil it down and make a nice little concentrate and add it. And we've tried it many different ways, and I went back to them and go, so how should we add it? We don't know. You're the cider maker. We make coffee.
We don't know.
We make coffee.
Oh, that's really funny.
So when they first came to us, I was just doing the Wildflower and the Rooted Insanity. And they go, hey, we got some dry cherries we think you might want to try. And I'm like, I'm not ready for anything new. We just opened. I'm still trying to get, you know, my whole system up and running and everything. And so about a year after that, I go, hey, what are those cherries? Well, they're not really cherries. They're Cascara. But why don't you try them? And so they import them because they sell it with their coffee sometimes. So, yeah. So – we have this in cans that we sell to – that our distributor sells out in Southeast Michigan and in West Michigan. We have two distributors that distribute around the state. One of them is Oath in Southeast Michigan and Aaron, the owner. And then the other one is King's Tree in West Michigan with Paul is our distributor out there. Owns that one. So.
Okay. So 4-pack cans, 12-ounce cans basically,
yep.
Right?
Yep, that's correct.
That's a great form factor, I think,
yeah,
for folks who like cider.
Yeah, we started with 22s and we went – because 22s is easier when it's just one. And then we went to 12-ounce bottles. And then the stores, I started realizing that they can stack two 12-ounce cans,
yep,
where a 12-ounce bottle is, and asked if they can do cans. So we went to cans.
It's almost like the whole cider market has like woke up to that now.
Yeah.
And like the Vandermills of the world, who definitely started in bottles, they're all in cans now. And same with Blake's and almost everybody else. Like it's amazing how quickly that's happened.
Yeah.
Right? I'm glad to see you. All right. We're going to take a quick break and I'm going to do a quick plug for another show. And once that's done, we'll continue our conversation with Sean from Fourth Coast Cider Works.
Hey there, my name is Seth Ressler.
Hi everyone, it's Becky Scarsello.
I am new to the Detroit area.
And I've been here my whole life.
So we started a podcast together. It's called The D Brief.
Detroit's arts and entertainment podcast.
We cover concerts, comedy, plays, food, drink, all kinds of stuff.
All the cool events around town, things to do, and the people that are doing them.
Can we talk about some of the people we've had as guests on this podcast?
Hey, this is Mark Kurlianchik, the restaurant critic for the Detroit Free Press.
Hi, I'm Ian DeLisi, and I host Essential Music on 101.9 WDET.
Hi, this is Mark Ridley, Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle.
Hey, this is Kate Williams, executive chef of Lady of the House.
Hey, this is Meltdown from WRIF in Detroit.
This is Josh Mallerman, author of Bird Box.
This is Carmen Harlan,
curator of film at the Detroit Institute of Arts.
President and founder of Valentine Distilling Company.
The general manager of innovation experiences for the Henry Ford.
Arts and entertainment editor at the Detroit Free Press.
The Michigan Science Center.
Arts Beats and
Detroit Public Theater.
The Detroit Shakespeare in Detroit.
If you like going out in the city of Detroit, you're going to like this podcast.
The Debrief Podcast.
We like to say Detroit's moving.
Keep up.
The Debrief.
Your guide to Detroit's arts and entertainment scene.
All right, Detroit's moving so much that the audio feed started to cut out as they said that. That's pretty funny. Also on the Debrief, Motor City Brew Tours founder, owner, and this guy, Steve Johnson. I've been on there a couple times. Great show. They're great folks. You should check out their podcast. Go to thedebrief.com to learn more about that. All right, I'm back here with Sean from Fourth Coast Cider Works, and we're enjoying awesome hard cider here on a beautiful, super hot and balmy Wednesday in Michigan. And he just keeps whipping out more. Well, that sounds weird. He keeps opening More Kansas cider here. This is a pretty good day.
So this one's our wildflower. It's our semi-sweet one. And on our, our website, I keep a couple. We have a couple mixed cider drinks that we use for this one. And the wildflower, people get confused. It's named just wildflower. And the way I got it was, again, I was around my daughters and they were playing hockey at the time. And I was thinking of a name for a semi.
Because that's what I thought your daughters were doing, playing hockey, right?
They do, yes.
We live in a modern world. Women can do anything. I love it.
That's right. They can, including win soccer world championships, right?
No doubt. Yeah. No doubt. Yay.
So I needed a name for a semi-sweet soccer. I'm back on soccer cider. And I was like, hey, you know what? Hockey players, they're kind of semi-sweet, you know, girls hockey. So I named our wildflower after their hockey team, the Wildflowers that they were on at the time. So,
hey, okay. So I would not have guessed that.
That's the name.
That's pretty awesome.
So this one's a little bit sweeter than the other one. We don't use sugar to sweeten these. It's all apple sweetened. So this one's at 6.7%.
Oh, okay. Well, at least it's less alcohol than
– Right. It's a little bit having to do with a little bit of the sweetening, you know, and where we're at with the apples.
So where are you sourcing apples from and or where are you sourcing kind of the juice from? You're just sourcing the juice, correct?
Right. We don't press.
Okay.
Other people can press way better.
It seems like that would be the case. It seems like unless you own an orchard –
Right.
You're not really pressing.
So I have a guy in West Michigan who sources the apples for me from different places. So that way and he has the contacts where he can get the juice, the cider for us. He gets me a certain profile. The families and who own these farms are way more capable of pressing than I am. I concentrate on the production of the hard cider, what it tastes like at that point. So, his name's Craig. He's in West Michigan, and I buy all my cider for him. That portion I don't have to look for. So that's
– when you're sourcing it or when you're buying it, like how much do you get delivered at once?
That depends. The first time I got it delivered, I filled all my tanks and I fermented them all at the same time. And I do not have the best ventilation system. And I was in there and you can just see them pumping out. I'm like, yeah, I think I'm feeling a little lightheaded, a lot of carbon dioxide. Luckily, I didn't have a tasting room.
So big life lesson.
Yes. Yes. Make sure you don't fill up every single one and ferment them. So now I usually leave a couple. So it all depends on where I'm at and where he's at.
It's like about a pallet size that's these big plastic containers?
Well it depends because some of them I get them pumped in. And so I have long hose.
Okay.
Pump them into the, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's a process I haven't really seen that much of. So I've been out to Blake's before and I have been in Vandermill before, but they're little bigger operations. And I'm not sure I really even had that part explained to me while I was there.
So talking about family and doing that, I brought my family out one time to one of those, I think it was to Blake's, and they wanted to explain some, like how they crush the apples and stuff. And we don't crush apples. My daughters were there and they've been helping me in the thing. They're like, hey, I want to see what your carb stone looks like. Let's see what your
They were really saying that? Oh, that's funny.
These little girls, and he kept on looking at them going, huh, why are they so
little smarter than the average girl, right?
That's right.
Oh, that's funny. Because they're just around you. They just start picking up all the verbiage and asking you questions, and they're probably just like sponges.
Right. And one of them wanted because originally, she helped me cap a few of them, and she's like, so I showed her how to use a capper. She's like, what does your bottling line look like?
I'm really intrigued by the small an operation at your size versus larger commercial sizes, honestly, because I just love to figure out how you figure out that process, you know. And when I got into this business, I was really more interested in the I don't want to say littler guy because it I don't want to belittle your business. I'm saying just the smaller operator versus big commercial operators where there's a zillion people involved, right? When I'm talking to you and your family, like you guys are doing everything.
Right. So, you know, when I was setting up, I knew how to set up some of the stuff because I went through the course on how some – but everything is, you know, individualistic. You have to have a way that you can carbonate instead of bottle carbonate because then you're going to have the same dry cider every time. So we do use a bright tank to do that, just same as beer does. When I set everything up, I made sure everything worked. And when things started working, I was so happy that I
– You're like, I did it.
Yeah, that's right. I did do it. The one issue I had was I was taking off a carbonated tank – into a non-carbonated vessel, and I had budgeted $300 for a bottle filler. And when I called the guy, he's like, nope, you can't do this. You can only use this for wine. It's for non-carbonated. I'm like, okay, back to the drawing board, find it out. 10 grand to find about a 300 to 10 grand is a lot of money out of just, you know,
wow.
my savings. I'm like,
gotcha.
I can't afford that. So I went back to my course, and one of the guys had pictures of him where he built a bottle filler that, you know, with all the specs and stuff on it, luckily. And I managed to measure it out on the picture and hopefully scale it to the right size. And we built one for just under $500.
So. Oh, wow.
So
okay.
That saved us a ton of money. So yeah, when we start small, you don't really – I can't go back and just say, hey, give me another 100 grand for this. Give me another – you know, I want this for our tasting room and stuff.
I think a lot of people forget that.
Yeah.
You know, they just see an end product and they don't realize, hey, there's people with real – like it's their money.
Right.
If you're buying that, it's like you were taking that money from somewhere else, as it be, you know, like you said, from your money you got from being in the military or retirement savings or whatever. It's a big deal.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, for an extra 10 grand, we didn't budget 10 grand. And it's not like
sure.
We weren't open yet because we weren't bottling yet.
Plus, so can you see the return? How long does it take you to see a return if you're making a $10,000 investment?
Right. We the whole tap room was done off of a shoestring budget. We have a bar. It's small. It's a very small bar. And it's 100-year-old flooring from a farmhouse outside of Flint.
Okay.
And we got it from Rochester Salvage, and I told him our story, and he's like, I'm not charging you. You can have this. And so we put it together, and it was warped, and it came undone and had
– Oh, God.
So this is on top of making the cider. I'm trying to make this little tiny bar
right.
And stuff. And we finally got it all, the shellac or whatever, and it never hardened, and we had to redo it over and over again and stuff. But I mean, when it came out, I mean, it's a nice to look at bar that's 100-year-old. I didn't sand it. It has all the paint on it from 100 years, the warm parts from 100 years of walking on it, and you know, everything's still on it. But that was like, we're lucky it came out that way because that was not in our budget. There's no bar in the budget to do that. And like I said, we didn't never plan on opening a tap room. So, yeah.
I make every decision that way now, I have to admit, with my business. I'm constantly thinking of, okay, where do I not need to spend money? Where should I spend money? How can I do that? Quality but cheaper, right?
Right, right.
Like, I'll give you an example. Like, I have a local screen printer in Berkeley, Armadillo Screen Printers. Yeah, I think I'm saying the name right. And I just started using them this year, and they're cool with me bringing in shirts I bought wholesale, and then they just screen print them for me. Because they just upcharge that anyhow. And some screen printers don't necessarily care if you do it that way, right? That's like a simple way of looking at it. So you find there's all these operators online that sell wholesale shirts now. That wasn't something that used to exist. And now like same place printers go to, you can kind of go to.
So that's great information about that, because like going to a really close local place like that can do that and save a little money, that is a huge thing for us. And I can step this back a little bit, but for us, we really try to find our stuff locally so that, for one thing, picking it up.
Yeah.
The
shipping charge part of it.
Oh, yeah.
It's a big deal.
When we looked at bottles originally, we looked at our first batch was going to be 10 grand in bottles, and it was going to be 6 grand to ship them to us. I'm like, well,
yep.
That doesn't make it cost effective.
No,
at all.
No. And so bottles are heavy.
Yeah. And so we found a place in Michigan that actually did it, and it did it way cheaper. It did it for $85 opposed to, you know, $6,000. But when we got our haulers, we get them out of Bay City. I mean, you can drive there and pick them up.
Yeah. Once those guys opened up, they gave a lot of breweries, cideries, meaderies, all the craft beverage companies another option. I go to a operator down in it's called Custom Deco. Although it was just acquired by someone down in Toledo, and that's where I get pint glasses from.
Okay,
and they let me pick them up, and it's funny because you know it's a huge. You pull into this building that where they do all the printing on them, and Libby Glass is down in Toledo, so they're really just buying glass from Libby, and then they're printing on it down there. But you go there, and it's not glamorous. Like I pull up my little Jeep Cherokee. And I go to this loading dock where, you know, 18-wheelers are pulling into this place, right? And then there's little Steve Johnson and his Cherokee pulling in there, backing in. I hit some buzzer and some dude who smokes three packs a day on a forklift comes out. He's like, what's your order number? You know, and then he like comes out with like this. I'd like to say it's a pallet, but it's not really a pallet, right?
Right.
It's like on a pallet, but there's like, say, 15 cases or I don't know. Sometimes I order as many as 400 pint glasses at a time or something like that, sometimes 500. But that's like a year's worth for me, you know? And but I'm not paying for shipping, so I make it like a day. Like last time I did it, I went down to Toledo. This was like actually right before I came to your brewery in December, I had picked them up. And then I pick them up, and then I hit a couple breweries while I'm in Toledo, you know, for R&D and stuff. And then sure enough, like this spring, I did a day trip bus tour out there, and I visited those breweries on a bus tour. So like it was like pre-work for that, but I made a fun day of it, right. You know.
That's great. I mean,
and obviously, that's like another way of interesting sourcing.
Right.
Right. Like I stumbled upon that somehow, and now my cost for glasses is a lot lower than I would have had otherwise. Or the Bay City operator that you're going through, like it's probably the same distance either way for me. I could kind of split it. I've tried to find that with almost every aspect of my business. I think you'll find that over time. You're right. Staying local, but staying with people that want to work with you.
Right.
And in the end, that keeps your risk down, your costs down.
Right.
It's a good business lesson, good small business lesson.
You know, I've had other local places I've gone to that I've wanted to work with. But, I mean, we're small. They want us to do like 100,000 of this. And stuff.
Right.
I'm like, when am I pushing 100,000? I go, actually, it's not even whether or not I'm pushing 100,000. How much space do I have?
Totally. I would think for bottles, cans, kegs, growlers, all those things, it's space constraints.
It is. It very much is.
So with cans, did you go in with other people as you've purchased cans? So, I hear a lot of breweries that do that. Is that something that you do?
So the cans, my first one of cans that I did, I just did one pallet as the first one, and I did it on my own.
Okay.
And I got it from the same place as the bottles did. They just got new into cans. We got a really good deal on them. We've had some collaborations with another winery, and we did cans. They actually have some of our cans. We went in with them, and they have a bigger place, so they're holding the cans, and we can order them from them. And that's Fieldstone Winery.
Yeah, downtown Rochester.
Right. And
they're doing hard cider and wine, right?
They do. Yeah. That's correct. And we actually did a collaboration with them over the holidays when all the lights were up and stuff. We did a treaty cider. It was a vanilla oaked age cider. So
fun.
Yeah, it went really quick. So that was a great collaboration. So yeah, we do work with at least with them right now.
Okay. I was just my wife and I and another couple, we were just in there a couple of weeks ago as we were down at Rochester Mills Brewer Company having dinner. And then we were just kind of walking the street. And we went in there and wow, yeah, geez, they have a lot more ciders on in there than they used to have. That's nice to see that.
They do, and I like to talk to them about some of their systems and bounce ideas back and
forth
off of
that's how
things.
You guys learn stuff.
Right, exactly.
So we're going to run out of time. It's funny how quickly an hour goes. Talk to me about kind of what you feel about the whole hard cider scene in Michigan and kind of what you've seen in your couple years of doing business here. You know, how do you feel about it? And do you think it's a growing community?
I do think it's a growing community. So one of the reasons why and I think it was not quite as mature when we moved here as it was in Oregon. So I saw it in the grocery stores be one shelf to an entire section of hard cider there and thinking that we're going to open a hard cider and that type of thing. I didn't think it was going to happen here. I've seen now we're getting to the point where there's hard cider section. So I see it growing. I see people really understanding it. And I also see, like you said, the palate's mature. They're going to dry ciders. They're going to other types of ciders, and that's why we're trying to keep up with it with a smoking stout, with the Weiss style cider. Not necessarily just adding fruit to it, though we still do that. But yeah, I see it opening up not just in those people that like the fruit, but the people who are on the other side that are also beer drinkers that are looking for a different taste.
I'm noticing it even on tap lists where it used to be you might go into a beer bar, your average bar, and they'd have like a cider on tap. Right. And it's like the chance of you being that cider, it'd be challenging. Right. Now we're seeing a few ciders on. Sometimes it's a section on a list now, where that was kind of unheard of, say, 5 years ago.
That, I follow sometimes the Nielsen ratings, what they say about it. And Nielsen said that bars usually have 1/6 barrel of cider on tap. We've actually had quite a few requests for half barrels now. So it has.
Oh, that's a good sign.
Yeah, it is a very good sign for us. So it is definitely growing.
Because it's that establishment saying we're selling enough that we're confident in the half barrel versus the 6 barrel that. So it's not going to sit forever on the half barrel because they feel like they're turning it over faster.
Right.
That's the whole point of doing half barrels.
Right.
It's a better cost to that establishment.
Yep. Yeah. Right. And, you know, like I said, we only do 6 barrels in our cider because that's all we're equipped for. But we can go through one of those in a weekend. So, yeah.
Oh, that's great to hear that. Even on your hours.
Yeah.
That's
even on the limited
pretty
hours.
Awesome. Oh, love that. Well, Sean, I want to thank you for coming on the show today. How fun to have a cider maker. I've wanted to have a cider maker on here for a while. Folks want to get more information about Fourth Coast Cider Works in Orion Township. What should they do?
I always keep up our Instagram page, and I always have a little writing on there. I keep up our Facebook page. We also have fourthcoastciderworks.com. I would actually go to our social media first.
Okay. Hey, that's an honest answer. I like that. Well, I want to thank you for coming on. So, folks, if you want to come out and check out a cider, one, you can find it in some local area stores, the occasional good bar. But also, you should just come out to the tasting room. You should make a trip out there on Fridays and Saturdays from 6 to 9 p.m. Might even run into me out there. Coming kind of Q1 next year, I'll definitely be doing another bus tour in there. So look at that on the MotorCityBrewTours.com website. If you want to learn more about this show, you can go to BeerTourGuide.com, BetterOnDraft.com, PodcastDetroit.com, or any of the podcast platforms. I want to thank Sean for coming on. Next month for episode 26 – I'm going to have Richard, the brewer from Traffic Jam in Snug in Midtown, come on the show. That should be a fun conversation. I've known Richard for a bunch of years, and we'll talk about Michigan's first brew pub. So stay tuned for that show. I want to thank everybody for coming on. I want to thank Better on Draft for sponsoring the show and Podcast Detroit for having a kick-ass studio. Thanks. We'll talk to you guys next month.